We look into the mirror and say, that's me. But that big me in the mirror is really 137.2 trillion little me's, and each and every one of them is hungry. So we ask, how does one feed 137.2 trillion living cells?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,142nd edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Ensenada who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, we do like to think of ourselves as ourself, do we not? We look into the mirror and sure enough, there's that big me right there looking back at us. But that big me really is not all just me. It's really a conglomeration of many other living me's working together to produce that big me in the mirror. Let's see if we can get a rough count of how many of those little me's there are in that big me. First, of course, there are the living cells that give our body shape, form, and substance. The folks at National Geographic took apart the human body, in a figurative sense at least, and weighed the cells in each body part. Their conclusion, the average human body contains 37.2 trillion living cells. Next, there are the microorganisms that live within the big me, and who have a lot to do with the me getting along in the world. According to the Marshall Protocol Knowledge Base, the human gut alone contains an average of 100 trillion microbial living cells. Adding the 37.2 with the 100, we see that there are 137.2 trillion little me's in that big me we see in the mirror. And here's the deal. Each one of those 137.2 trillion little me's is alive. It's hungry and demanding to be treated with respect or else. And so we ask, how should we feed our living cells so that everybody is happy? And here to help us come to grips with the question, we have Dr. Dan Pompa, who is a consultant and a teacher to health professionals about cellular health. Welcome to the Food Chain, Doctor. Pleasure to have you aboard.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, you know, in thinking about this show, of course, I'm struck with the notion of the fact that I've never thought of all of those living cells that make me up and have always thought about the big me that I see in the mirror. But you're calling our attention to all of those living cells that make us all up. But before we go there, I'd like to ask you about the whole world of chiropractic. I know you're a chiropractic doctor who has since kind of transcended the profession to become a teacher of cellular health. But it seems like every chiropractor I know is transcending that world of mechanical parts that make up the body and the alignment of all of those parts to become a kind of a whole health practitioner. Every one of the chiropractors I know could sit down and talk for 39 hours straight about nutrition and whatnot. What happened to you guys?
Yeah, I think it's our philosophy. You know, the philosophy is you remove the interference and the body does the healing. So, you know, it's a philosophy that the innate intelligence, you know, that God put in our body is what heals, right? And health doesn't come from outside in, but it's there, and we remove the interference. So chiropractors adjusting the spine, they remove nerve interference. You know, my expertise has become in cellular healing and cellular detox, so we remove chemical interference. We remove even other stressors. Emotional stressors can cause interference in healing. You know, so physical, spiritual, emotional, it all ties into cellular health. But, yeah, I mean, chiropractors, really, we look at the body as a whole for that reason, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So it's in keeping with the general philosophy, but you just kept growing. It didn't hang around with one particular modality, but have expanded into a lot of different ones.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the philosophy, you know, you start to realize that if you're going to treat the whole body, then it goes beyond just the spine, which many people listening may not even understand. I mean, your brain sits between your ears, and basically, ironically enough, it came from a single cell. I mean, it went into something called the neurotube, which is a big cell membrane, basically. So, and then from the brain, the spinal cord, and all the organs formed, and the body was formed. But that brain still has the ultimate control over every organ system of the body, and really almost around, you know, every cell, really, even though there's cell-to-cell communication, still the brain makes every decision. So, chiropractors, you know, we believe that the spine can interfere with the signals from the brain, and therefore the health of the body. So again, you know, it's a whole body look at how health actually even occurs.
And you teach chiropractors about cellular health. How do you address them? Because you're kind of taking them to a whole new place, are you not?
Well, how do I address it? First of all, I teach more than just chiropractors. Mm-hmm. I teach MDs, NDs, chiros. I believe that what I teach, the cellular healing, so detox, is needed today to get people well. I have a saying, you don't fix the cell, you will never get well.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I always like to ask, one of my favorite questions of guests is about their epiphany moment. And wondering if you had an epiphany moment when you, as a chiropractor, realized it starts with a cell. Do you remember that moment?
Well, it was in my own journey. So I was very sick, actually, at one point. Probably in the best shape of my life physically. I was training for some bike races. I was racing at the expert level, and fatigue hit. And I thought maybe I was overtraining, backed off the bike in the training, came back at it, and it was worse, not better. And it went from the fatigue to insomnia, where I couldn't sleep at night. I'd wake up in the middle of the night or couldn't get to sleep. Then it went to anxiety, panic attacks. I became food intolerant to every food I ate. I couldn't even function in the world anymore. I mean, I was so chemically sensitive. I had many bizarre symptoms. As a matter of fact, I thought it was just my adrenal glands, again, that I just burnt them out through stress and overworking, overtraining. But when I would address those, some things would get better, but many things worse. And I thought it was my thyroid because my hair was thinning. Of course, I was gaining fat and losing muscle, an odd thing, and my energy was horrible, and hair was, like I said, thinning and falling out. You know, so I even went and got blood tests, and unfortunately, most of my tests were absolutely normal, which was frustrating. I wanted to find something. Through the process of my self-searching for my life to get my life back, it's where I really discovered the cellular healing. And, you know, it really, it does boil down to the cells and the 100 and, you know, there's so many things, 137 trillion, we've heard 70 trillion, all the different cells.
Right.
But look, the bottom line is that when these cells start to malfunction, we don't feel well. As a matter of fact, we don't have normal hormones, even though our levels in our blood, when I would measure my blood, were normal. The problem was is they weren't communicating their message effectively in the cell because my cells were inflamed. It was probably the first thing. I started reading about cellular inflammation as being the causative factor for not just diabetes, because we think, if you've heard the term insulin resistance, I'm sure. Insulin resistance simply means your cells are not hearing the hormone insulin. So therefore, the glucose can't get in the cell, builds up in the blood, a.k.a. diabetes, insulin resistance. So cellular resistance to insulin. That's how we think of hormone resistance. But this is occurring not just with insulin, but it's occurring in many people with almost every hormone, even nutrients. So they're not able to get their information in the cell because the cells are inflamed. So think of it this way. It's like shouting at our children. We can shout louder. In the beginning, the children hear us, But after a while, they start hearing us less and less. So therefore, taking more hormones necessarily isn't the long-term answer, because it seems to work in the beginning, but then we need to take more and more hormones. We need to shout at our kids louder and louder. And for those of you who don't have kids, I'll give you another example. It's like your car runs out of gas, and you're trying to dump the gas on outside of the tank or outside of the car. You have to get the gas in the tank, and that's the way our hormones work. So cellular inflammation, when I started reading about it, I said, my gosh, you know, this is it. Now, for me, it was toxin-induced hormone resistant.
So there was something you were taking then that was fouling up the works.
Well, it wasn't that I was taking it. So, I mean, again, when we look at how most people actually become toxic today at the cellular level that drives the cellular inflammation, it starts in utero. Oh. It literally is from the womb
from
to the tomb.
From the womb to the tomb. Can you hold that? We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to the cell itself, and I'd like to have doctor to tell us exactly how this works. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Dr. Dan Pompa at drpompa.com.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Think of all of those cells that are in our bodies, 137.2 trillion, when you add up everything that makes up us and all of the microbiota that makes up the organisms that live with us and in us, a lot of living cells. All of them need to be fed and treated with respect. And if we don't, look out. So, and we don't often take good care of them. What happens to those cells? You know, you talked, Dr. Pomper, you were talking a little bit about how they talk to each other.
Right.
Don't think about that very often. How do they actually talk to each other, those cells, all those little cells?
Yeah, they do. There's things called redox molecules, and those are simply, we'll just call them communication molecules between cells. And cells have to communicate. Cells communicate with the bacteria in our gut, which you pointed out, outnumber our cells arguably 10 to 1. So they even have communication with those bacteria. A pretty complicated system, but the problem is when the cells become inflamed, they don't communicate as well. And then what happens is disease can start to form.
Well, so it starts with the cell then that things start cascading. You know, you described your illness, and to me it sounded like a cascading of problems. Started someplace, kept going, kind of like a snowball rolling down a hill, got to the bottom, you had an avalanche. And you started looking at your cells and came to the conclusion that inflammation was a significant cause of that. Had a conversation with a gal that works at the local hospital last evening, and I asked her, you know, what the biggest problem was of, you know, people, what causes people to go to the hospital? And she said, oh, inflammation.
Right.
And so we're coming to the realization that inflammation really is the problem. And what causes that inflammation, doctor?
Yeah, you know, and just to point out, when people hear this, you know, you think of inflammation as your sore knee, sore shoulder, which that's inflammation. But more specifically, when we look at the cause of cancer, heart disease, diabetes, everything that we're talking about, even weight loss resistance, the inability to lose weight, it's driven by cellular inflammation, where literally the cell membranes become inflamed. That's where the receptors are to all of your hormones. That's how cells communicate with each other. That's how your brain sends signals from the pituitary that sits in the center of your brain to your thyroid, to your adrenals, to other cells, because of these receptors that sit on these membranes, and that inflammation can block it. So to answer your question, it is a logical question. What would be causing this? The number one thing is the hidden thing. It's the toxins, and that's what got me. But I would argue elevated glucose and insulin. You know, the standard American, you may not be diagnosed with diabetes, but we're constantly spiking glucose and insulin with the standard American diet.
As often as we can, right?
Exactly. That will drive inflammation when done chronically. And also bad fats, they're everywhere. I mean, and again, you look at all the vegetable oils that are in just about every product, even if you go in a health food store, canola oil, vegetable oil, it's all rancid oils that drive cellular inflammation because those fats make their way to the membranes and inflame them. So I would say those three things are the main causes anyways. There's others. So toxins, elevated glucose and insulin, and bad fats.
You know, I ran across a study out of France just this past week in which the French researchers at a university looked at 100,000 French people and looked at their cancer rates and said, what is the reason for all of this cancer? And they came to the incredible conclusion that the single biggest causal factor of cancer in human beings was processed foods.
Well, look, when you look at what's in processed food, you get three of the three.
Meaning all of them are
they're loaded with toxins. Matter of fact, one of which is called glyphosate. That is the active ingredient in Roundup. That's what we're spraying our food supply with on this planet. And look, it creates something called leaky gut. What does that mean? That means this opens up your gut. That's your intestines. And now imagine a leaky pipe. A leaky pipe, you have water going through it. Well, imagine that's what's happening to undigested food going into your bloodstream. That's called leaky gut. Okay, because this toxin literally opens up the gut and allows these foods and undigested foods to go through. That is driving so many allergies, so much autoimmune. That means your body's attacking itself. Think of conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Crohn's, colitis. Matter of fact, it is said that 90 to 95% of Americans have autoimmune and don't know it because we don't have the testing sophisticated enough to test for it, but yet they don't feel well, they have brain fog, lack of energy, they have autoimmune, don't know it, much of which is driven by this leaky gut, definitely driven by toxins. Also, this one chemical they're spraying on all of our food is opening up our brain, blood-brain barrier. That's the same type of barrier that's in the gut, which is allowing toxins to flow in and across the brain, which is leading to more neurodegenerative conditions, dementia, which is massively on the rise, Alzheimer's, escalating, autism, Parkinson's, MS. I can go down the list. You know, so that's one. Now you get in processed food, you get the glucose and insulin spike. Then you get the bad fats, all of it in processed food.
Woo. Last week we did a radio show featuring moms across America who did a survey of the wines, 10 California wines from Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino County, every one of them, even the ones from the organic and biodynamic vineyards contain glyphosate. So frightening stuff then.
And you know why that is? Because they irrigate. So when you go to Italy, France, they don't irrigate. As a matter of fact, it's illegal. So what that means is that the vines grow down to get their water. In Napa, most of the vineyards, almost all, they're irrigating. So the vines are on the surface, so to speak. So even if you're an organic farmer, they're spraying glyphosate, but the water is on the surface, so it's basically transferring into the organic grapes. And by the way, according to wine in this country, 76 chemicals are allowed in wine, and none of it has to be on the label. So
76?
76.
Never heard of that one before. I guess we just do things differently here. I guess is the reason that we're finding ourselves into trouble. You call them millennial diseases. Why?
Well, when we look, this generation, we have all been exposed in utero to lead and mercury, but this generation is being exposed to this glyphosate, which there's a 2012 study from the senior scientist at MIT. She showed that glyphosate, this chemical on our food that we've been talking about, opens up the blood-brain barrier, allows these chemicals that, number one, we're already exposed to and being exposed to, like mercury and lead, to cross deeper into the brain. So now we have new millennial diseases, things like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, you know, this gluten sensitivity, you know, just bizarre things that we've never seen. Of course, the rise in autism and autism spectrum disorders. But, you know, this generation I fear for, you know, because of their massive increase in vaccinations. It's a whole other subject, a whole other exposure of toxins, the massive overuse of glyphosate in our food, and then they're exposed to the heavy metals like we were, but yet even more today because of the food, because of the vaccination increase, et cetera. So that's an issue.
Well, it sounds like we're in very deep doo-doo from what you're telling us, but also from what we observe. It's not hard to see it. You just look around and it's happening just about everywhere, but Dr. Pompa is going to lead us out of the wilderness because he has five simple ways that we can all adopt and perhaps find our way out of that wilderness. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about millennial diseases and how we get rid of them, and it all starts with a cell. And we're going to get out of that when we come back. Do stay tuned to the Food Chain Radio program.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, just think of all of the living cells that we must tend every day. We must feed them, and we must treat them with respect. And if we don't, we're going to find ourselves in very big trouble. A lot of us are finding ourselves in very big trouble. Dr. Pompa suggests starts with a cell, the smallest part of us, of which they say we have 137.2 trillion of them that make us up. And when we look at ourselves in the mirror, what we're actually seeing is that conglomeration of all of those living cells somehow put together in one person. That's us. So got to start thinking about how best to take care of those living cells. And I've never really thought of it before. And Dr. Pompa, how did you start thinking of the cell as a place to start taking care of ourselves?
Yeah, you know, when you have to save your own life, you start reading a lot. You know, and with my education, I was able to read a lot of studies and understand them. And I actually had dyslexia. I still have dyslexia, but as a child, I couldn't read, believe it or not, until like sixth grade because of my dyslexia. But my compensation of it allowed me to have this photographic memory, which, by the way, when I got sick, I lost. But I would have times where I had it back, and I would just read and read and read, and it took me to the cell. And again, if you want to get well today, you have to fix the cell.
So you had all of these modern times afflictions, the symptoms thereof at least, and you looked at your own cells and thought, okay, I got to come to grips with this. Well, how did you come to grips with it?
Yeah, you know, you start learning about the cell functions that are disrupted because of the onslaught of these toxins that we're exposed to from utero. And by the way, the number one cause of mercury toxicity is mom. I mean, we start, the number of silver fillings in mom's mouth is proportional because they contain 50% mercury. It's proportional to how much mercury they find in the baby's brain. That's the DRAS study.
So this, you keep talking about in utero, and you're not kidding. It's from the mother's teeth.
And her bones.
And her bones.
Bones is lead, and it's stored, and it's passed on when the mom's pregnant because it's normal to lose bone during pregnancy, but out comes the lead. So there's the first exposure, right? And then you start vaccinating these kids, you know, with many, many different chemicals and many heavy metals, and then, of course, it starts bioaccumulating through our life, really. And then there's, again, if you put a silver filling in your mouth, that's 50% mercury. By the way, that's what made me sick, is when I had that accumulating through my life, and I got them removed incorrectly, and it vaporized a lot of mercury that crossed into my brain. But anyways, I mean, to answer your question,
how did you start coming to grips with healing yourself?
Yeah, I mean, looking at the cell function, I mean, you start realizing that mercury and these things disrupt certain cell functions. So fixing the membrane, I started developing something called my five R's. I didn't develop this while I was sick. I started piecing this together while I was sick and started doing many of these things to fix myself. Later, I developed what is called my five R's, meaning R number one is you have to remove the sources in your life. And that could be those silver fillings. That could be you live in a moldy home. It could be the toxic food you're eating, etc. Number two is regenerating the cell membrane. So reading how important the cell membrane is for hormone function, how important the cell membrane is for detoxing the cell, and even changing the genome of the cell, epigenetics it's called, meaning in the old days we used to think that, you know, you had diabetes because your father got it or your mother had it, etc. We know that's not true now. We know that we trigger certain susceptibilities that we inherit. So we trigger certain genes. And by the way, toxins are the number one thing that triggers these genes. It could be any stressor, but toxins trigger these genes. So,
well, that's what the French membrane. Yeah, that's what the French study says about processed food. Number one connector with cancer is processed food.
Yeah, so we turn these genes on, but the cell membrane has to be regenerated to turn off the bad and turn on the good. So just to get through them, R3 is you have to restore cellular energy. Otherwise, you're never going to feel well. You're never going to lose weight normally. You're not going to have normal brain function, etc. R4 is reducing the inflammation. Now, that sounds trite because inflammation is the cause of so many things, but we have many strategies I teach to my doctors to do that. And R5 is reestablishing something called methylation. Methyl groups are responsible for turning on good genes, turning off bad. They're responsible for detoxing the cell, getting rid of toxic hormones. I mean, they have so many different...
They're kind of like communicators?
They are. They communicate. They do so many things. So, you know, that is why people don't feel well today. It's these cell functions that are really being just hammered, if you will, in today's society with today's stressors. If we don't upregulate those cell functions, you're not going to feel well. So that's the message that I teach.
Okay, let's go back and run through them as quickly as we can, but there's so much information, I don't know how quickly we can do that. Start with R1 and removing the source. Of course, get rid of your feelings, your silver feelings. Quit drinking wine with glyphosate in it, if you can find it. All of those things, we all, you know what, there was a study about a gal that does a university class called Psychology of Eating. And she has her students do food diaries, and she's read thousands of them. And they all say the same thing. I was short of food, I was short of time, and I ate the wrong thing. I know it was bad, but I did it anyway. And aren't we all like that a little bit? You know, we know we're doing bad when we're eating those things, but we somehow can't stop ourselves. How do you stop?
Well, it's interesting because when you have this, when your cell's inflamed, when your cells are toxic, you can't control yourself. Because a toxic cell, your cells can use two things for energy, sugar or fat. Unfortunately, most Americans are stuck as sugar burners with the hormonal inability to use fat as energy. Healthy people, healthy cells, have the ability to use sugar or fat, sugar or fat. So when you're not eating, your cells will burn its own fat as an energy source, which the problem is this. When you're stuck as a sugar burner, that doesn't happen because it can't use your fat for energy. So what does it do? It'll either give you a craving you can't resist. So you go, oh, my God, I just have to have the bread. Why? Because it wants to survive. Or it'll break your muscle down into sugar. It's a process called gluconeogenesis. Either way, it gets its sugar fix. But either way, you start losing muscle, gaining fat, not being able to lose weight, less energy, more brain fog, worse sleep, worse hormone problems. So the point is we have to get our cells back to efficient fat burners. But that is how you, that's the five R's. You have to fix the cell to get well.
Okay. So at any rate, stop eating sugar, stop eating glyphosate, stop doing everything bad.
But Michael, I'm making the argument that
you have to do cellular detox because otherwise you can't stop.
Okay, we're going to...
Because the addiction is cellular.
Okay, we're going to pick that up when we come back. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we're talking about the living cells that make all of us up, and you have a trillion of them, over a trillion. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Okay, folks, we simply have to do it. We have to detox ourselves. Starts with removing all the bad things, and then we have to somehow regenerate the cell membrane, which is the casing that encompasses the living cell. How do you do that?
You have to eat the right fats. And
fats are good. Some of them are good.
Yeah, and that's a problem because, like I said, even in health food stores, you have so many of the bad fats, which are in most of the processed food, the chips, the packaged foods, things of that sort. You know, the vegetable oils are big killers. I mean, they are rancid fats that make their way to the cells, drive inflammation, cause the cell membranes to, you know, basically not function properly. And I'm even going to bring up another issue is that people today are all taking fish oil, which they think is helping them, but most of it's rancid. Most of it even goes rancid in the body, and not necessarily a good thing. I love eating fish. I'm just not crazy about the fish oil. Most people are getting these vegetable oils and canola oils, all these other rancid oils, and they really are dysregulating the cell membrane. So what do? I think we need to eat more good raw nuts and seeds, grass-fed meat, has these good fats in it. Mm-hmm. Even grass-fed butter is really good. So we used to think butter was bad. Now we know it stabilizes the cell membrane. So we need some of these things. Yes, good olive oil is great. You know, no problem. So, but we don't think of the good fats as the good fats. Here's what I mean by that. If I asked you, Michael, what are the two worst fats you can eat? Most people would answer saturated fat and cholesterol.
I don't think so.
It's not. They're the two of the most important in regards to the cell membrane.
I'm a fan of bone tea.
Yeah, me too. Bone broth.
Bone broth, yeah. Ooh, yes.
We need fat in the, you know, and these saturated fats and cholesterol stabilize the not only the cell membrane, but the lipid rafts, what are those? They are the things that your hormone receptors ride on. So when they connect to your membrane, they ride on these lipid rafts that saturated and fat and cholesterol stabilize. And then these really good omega-6 fats, people hear omega-3 because of fish oil, but omega-6 fats are the ones that are rancid. They're the ones that people are getting in all the processed foods. People are getting in, you know, the processed corn and the vegetable oils. We need these omega-6 non-rancid. So therefore, you know, eat some good raw nuts, you know, good raw seeds. I mean, those things are important. You get omega-6 in grass-fed meat. Everyone's eating regular meat that's bought in the store, which is grain-fed.
Grain-fed beef, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad.
It's horrible. It disrupts your memory.
It's like you're stealing the essential nutrients out of the food when you feed beef grain, because they're no longer eating the grasses that bring you the omega-3s and 6s, right?
That's right, in the perfect ratios that your cells need. So you have to relook at how you look at fat to fix the membrane.
There you go. Okay. Regenerate the cell membrane. Restore cellular energy.
Well, we have many strategies for this,
sugar,
from dietary to supplemental. But, you know, look, I said that the cells can use two things for energy, sugar or fat. One of the things, a couple different strategies that we do here to fix this problem is something that I've called feast famine cycles, diet variation. So we put people in states where they force the cell to actually use fat as an energy source. So I don't know, you're probably familiar with, Michael, I don't know about some of our listeners, but there's a process called ketosis. Have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ketogenic diet?
Right, a ketogenic diet. Now, I'm not a believer in keeping people in a ketogenic diet. I believe in something called diet variation, meaning we should move in and out of different diets just like our ancestors did. But let me explain ketosis. and then I'll explain these feast famine cycles and how we do this to regain cellular energy. All right. Ketosis is we're decreasing carbohydrate intake at least below 50 grams a day. That will put most people in a state of ketosis. It takes about 2 to 4 weeks to fat adapt to where you get into that ketosis. So the first week you don't feel well, your energy is down because your glucose is down. You're not using sugar. We're forcing your cells to use fat. Now, when you burn fat as energy, you start making something called ketones. And that's why it's called ketosis or ketone diet or ketosis diet. So this state is now your cells are using mostly fat for energy. Why is that significant? Because fat burns much cleaner than glucose. So think of glucose burning in your fireplace. A lot of smoke. If you don't open your damper, you're in trouble. Okay, so if your cells are working great, you have a damper. It's open, it gets rid of it. But if they're inflamed because of toxins and other things, now the toxins build up even in the cell. However, if we have an inflamed cell that has trouble getting rid of toxins it makes just from burning energy, by burning fat, it's like burning natural gas. It burns much cleaner. So now we have a chance to downregulate the inflammation of the cell. So that's an important thing that we use. Now, here's the other thing. I said feast famine cycles.
Okay, but I want you to hold that. Because,
yeah, we're going to talk about that when we get back.
There you go, because I don't want to lose that thread. It's such a feast famine cycle, and how we're going to induce that in ourselves so that we can restore some energy to ourselves. Just think of how that would feel. Oh, my goodness. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about the cells with Dr. Dan Pompa, who is a teacher and a consultant. You can always tune in with him at drpompa.com. Sounds just like it's spelled. Spelled just like it sounds. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org, the food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org, farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, I'm ready for some feast and famine. Sounds good, because I have some poundage to lose, but don't we all, when it gets right down to it, have a few extra pounds? So we starve ourselves, and that doesn't seem to work, and we don't do this, and we don't do that, and we try this diet, and we try that diet. What are we doing wrong, Dr. Pompa?
Yeah, well, look, I said that I believe in diet variation. The people that believe in vegetarian diets will say, I got on this diet, it made me feel so much better. I believe that. The paleo people, I went on a paleo diet, I felt so much better. I believe them too. And then you have perhaps the vegan. I went on a vegan diet, I believe them too. All right, so the
variation.
Variation, meaning if you look at every culture, they went in all of those diets that I mentioned. Look at the Hunza people. They are supposedly the healthiest living people that lived on the planet. Well, in the summer, they look like vegetarians. In the winter, they were in full-blown ketosis. Same with the American Indians. You know, they eat very vegetable, sure, plant-based diets during the summer. And then in the wintertime, they were stuck on high, high-fat ketosis, which I was just talking about. So I believe we want to move in and out of these diets. But here's the feast-famine cycling. Diet variation weekly. So I practiced something called intermittent fasting, to where I typically eat two meals in maybe a window of 4 to 6 hours. And I probably eat most of my time, my eating is happening in 4 hours. But in most of our clients or patients, we're probably getting them to eat in an 8 to 6 hour window. And we're fasting, so 18 hours, so to speak, 20 hours, so to speak. In that fasting time, we're teaching your cells, your mitochondria, that's where you make energy and burn fat or sugar. We're teaching that mitochondria to use fat because it has to. So, look, when you look, Michael, it's studies. You say eat less is the way to live longer. And there's study after study that shows that. But when we look at ancient cultures, they don't eat less like the American thinks of eating less. Meaning, okay, I'm going to caloric restrict. I'm going to eat half of my meal. I'm going to push it aside. Next meal, I'm going to eat half. I'm going to eat six little meals a day. That's the way Americans think of eating less. But ancient cultures didn't do that, Michael. They ate less by eating less often. Meaning, they ate just one or two meals a day, oftentimes just one meal a day. My Italian culture that I came from, they typically eat one meal 3 hours. You know, they'll drink their espressos during the day. So don't eat less. Eat less often. Now, at the end of the day, you typically do eat less. But here's the problem. When you're just caloric restricting and pushing food away, your body eventually thinks it's starving, so it lowers and lowers its metabolism. But when you eat less often and have a big meal to full, then your body never thinks it's starving, and it keeps burning its fat and its energy. So now, by doing this intermittent fasting where we're eating less often, we're teaching our mitochondria to use fat as energy when you're not eating.
And there it is, folks, almost out of time. DrPompa.com, P-O-M-P-A.com. You'll see the five R's there right on the homepage of that website. But, you know, all starts with a cell. And who can argue with that? For the very beginnings of life. Dr. Pompa, thank you so much for joining us. And folks out there, I'd like you to remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain. Cheap food isn't. And you know it isn't, right? Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Dr. Pompa. Appreciate
it. You're
welcome. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.